Welcome back to the Stephen Reed podcast. On today's episode, we have Dan Handley, and we're talking about life on the water and his passions for fishing. I hope you enjoy. Today's podcast, I'm joined by Dan Handley, a fairly new friend of mine, actually, who came into my life probably about a year ago and has very much gone along the boat journey with me. And he also lives on a boat with Sophie, who's a future guest on the podcast, hopefully. And actually, he's the first guest that we've had on the podcast who's also been on another podcast, so I'm expecting big things from you, Dan.
Thank you.
I'm not gonna lie. I think the main thing we have in common, really, and probably will come up a fair bit, is actually the fact that you do live on a boat and that you, that you've been doing that life for, is it about 2-3 years?
This spring it'll be about 3 years we've lived on the boat.
3 years.
So yeah.
Wow.
Which is and now we've got you alongside us as a boat neighbour, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm not actually moored up right next door at the moment, but for the last the last 2 months has been pretty much mostly next door, so which has been nice.
It's been good, isn't it?
And
it's been
I must
fun.
Say, as in terms of moving out of home, it's so nice to know that I can pick and choose my neighbours, and I know who you are, and that you've helped me out so much already, and hopefully I've been able to help you out with one or two things.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's been really good, isn't it?
It has been good.
It's been nice to have met you before you got your boat and gone on that little journey with you. It's been really cool.
Because we met probably about November last year.
I think so. Weren't you out on Ben's boat?
That's it. We were moored up in Wolhampton, and it actually was completely by chance that we stumbled across you guys, you and Sophie. We'd gone out probably no more than about a quarter of a mile from the marina, which is nothing looking back at it now, but we'd just gone down the canal a little bit and moored up. And we had our friends Pip and Laura come and join us for drinks in the evening.
Pip
walked past
it?
Your boat, and she said, "Oh, I think that's Sophie's boat." I was like, "What? Sophie?" And she's like, "Sophie, hell yeah." I knew Sophie lived on a boat because my mum had seen her advertising her craft business on Facebook, and she'd said to me a while ago, like, why don't you ask Sophie for some tips and whatnot?" Said, "Oh no, it'd be really weird to pop up."
No, I can't believe that. You should have. You should have got straight in there.
Definitely. I probably would have got onto the boat life a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
But you came along and helped out, like you said, across the journey massively.
Yeah, definitely. Because I remember, the first time we met you and you came over, and you were just kind of thinking about it, I suppose, weren't you?
Yeah.
You didn't really... You knew you wanted to do it, but I don't think you realised that it was going to happen that quickly, and that it could happen and become your reality, which is pretty cool, really.
I had a lot of questions back then.
Oh yeah, definitely. I can remember it was a question about pretty much everything.
Yeah, but I must say I've learned a lot in the last year, and there's a lot of stuff to it. I must admit that I had no idea there would be so much to living on a boat, but I've really enjoyed it. And actually, Dan came along the journey when I moved the boat from Birmingham to Thiel, I think it was.
Which was great fun, wasn't it? And it was nice for us as well, because we've been on this canal for the last couple of years living on it. So it was quite nice just to get out and see a different piece of the canal as well. And it was a good time, wasn't it? It was pretty good fun.
It was lovely.
It's nice to see the different canals and the rivers, and got you down it, which is the main thing.
Definitely. And it is 100% like probably the highlight of my year. Probably it's fairly normal, you know, moving out and whatnot, but the journey itself was something special. It was amazing, really. We were in our own little bubble, and we planned to take about 10 days, I think.
I think it was, yeah. I thought we thought a bit about that, but did it.
It took
a bit quicker, wasn't it?
Yeah, 8 days. We were hammering it, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. And I think that's the beauty of having other boaters on board, because you and Sophie did a lot of driving, and just, you know, it meant that me or Ben any of us could have a rest while someone else
was. It was really nice doing that, because we've been on, we took our boat away for a summer, or just for a couple of weeks even, just to go up to Oxford and back. But having just two of us doing it, it was a lot of hard work, and being with a group, it made it much more fun and relaxing. But how have you been living on your boat then? You've been enjoying it since?
I have. It's been 3 months now I worked out.
Amazing.
And actually the seasons have changed remarkably since I moved on.
Yeah.
It felt like summer while we moved the boat down, and now we're very much in winter. Although the beginning of it, I've been putting the fire on every day, and autumn seems to have skipped past that. I don't know how.
Yeah, definitely. It goes so quickly, doesn't it? That's one of the things I love about living on a boat and being out in the country. Like you see the seasons so much more, and you appreciate them, because they just don't hang around. It changes so quickly, and it's quite good that you're moving on. You've got a little bit of summer, bit of autumn, and then into the winter.
Yeah.
Instead of just moving straight on in the winter would have been probably quite hard, but it's only going to get better.
My grandparents reminded me when I saw them last weekend, actually, how good it was that I could get settled on the boat in nice weather.
Yeah, definitely.
The sad thing is at the moment that actually I don't get to see the boat that much in the light, because of being at work during the day. When I come home in the evenings, it's dark, and I don't see it very often apart from on the weekends. So yeah. I particularly enjoy the weekends at the moment.
Yeah, I bet it makes you look forward to them a lot more than you would just, at home. So it means you can, you spend time on your home, and you got that time in the daylight to do stuff. Whereas, similar to you, like during the week, you just, you don't really see anything, do you?
No.
Arrive, go into work in the morning in the dark and coming back, and that's it.
Yeah, exactly.
How have you been getting on with your firing stuff? Has it all been good?
Yeah, we're sat next to it now. It's definitely got the fire at the moment. It's gone out a little bit. It's got a load of coal on, so it should stay lit for quite a while. But there's definitely a lot more skill to it than I first thought. And I remember you said to me right at the very beginning that I'll get to know my burner or my fire. And I thought, what the hell is he on about? Because I've been, I've been doing fires for years and years in Scouts, and I love them. And I out of most of my friends and my parents and whatnot, I would proudly say, whether I'm right or not, I don't know, but I'd proudly say that I'm one of the best at lighting fires and keeping them going, or building fires. And so when it came as a bit of a shock when I first started lighting it on a daily basis, actually how difficult that was.
Yeah, it does take a little bit of time just to get your head around. Like every fire is a little bit different, isn't it? Like even just like comparing mine and yours, they're just cause obviously yours is a nice little small one, isn't it? And they are completely different, but you've got your head around it now, haven't you?
Mostly.
And it's just being prepared, really, isn't it? I suppose having dry wood.
Yeah.
Having coal when you need it.
I found
banking it up before you go to bed and stuff. You just get into that routine, isn't it? The more you do it, the more you get your head around it.
I've definitely got a routine going now.
Yeah.
So I know what I'm doing when I come in from work, and I can get the place a little bit hotter quicker. And I've got, I know what I'm doing before I go to bed as well to keep it. But it's actually the challenge I've had sometimes is I haven't always had enough of the right kind of wood.
Yeah.
I've had some really small wood and some really chunky logs, but I can't get from that small fire to the really big fire.
Yeah, that in between bit. That's the hardest bit, isn't it? You've got to have that in between size lugs and everything, which will keeping it nice and dry, and because I know like you said the other week, we went out up on the common getting wood, didn't we? And the first few nights you had it going, it wasn't that hot, and then by the end of the week, the fire was boiling up because it actually dried out by then, which is quite good, isn't it?
Yeah, but I've been burning some wood and it's still being damp, I think, and it's not kept it warm.
No.
Actually, this week it's fairly mild outside, and there's been a few nights where I've had to open all the doors and windows in here because it's been way too hot.
Yeah, you do. The most common question you get while living on a boat is, is it nice and warm during the winter? Do you not get cold? You're like, nah, the windows are open, it's too hot in here most of the time.
I got that today, actually.
Yeah, did you?
Almost on a daily basis, I go into work and someone either finds out that I live on a boat or someone thinks it's cold that morning, and so they'll ask, oh, I bet it's cold on the boat.
It's always the first question.
Is it cold on the boat? Oh, is it cold? I think someone actually, there is another podcast, our friend, Jude,
who is
another boater that I met the other week. She told me about this podcast called "Is It Cold in the Winter?" Is It Cold on the Boat? And it's about boating. And I think because it must be the most common question asked.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Like you were saying, you've been on your boat for about 3 years now. How did you come about the boat lifestyle?
Kind of happened really quickly, if I'm honest. We didn't really think about it. We were renting down near Winchester, which is always quite an expensive area anyway. But originally I'd wanted to actually buy a piece of land and either build like a log cabin or get a couple of yurts or something like that on a piece of land. That was always like my kind of aim. I've never really wanted to get a mortgage or have a massive house or rent if I have to, but at the time I had to anyway. But so I was saving up for a piece of land. I didn't quite realise how much land is to buy though. It's just ridiculous, even like a couple of acres is just it wasn't doable. And I think it was Sophie's dad was in a position where he had a bit of money to spend on. It would have got him like a one bedroom flat or a one bedroom house or something. We've walked up and down the canal for years, and always admired it, and just thought it was a really cool way of life. And we were saying to him, oh, why don't you buy a boat? And he wasn't very keen on the idea. And then after a while, we kept nagging him, being, oh, go on, buy a boat. And then it just clicked, and we're like, why are we telling him to buy a boat? Why don't we just buy a boat? And so we kind of did a little bit of research on it, and within a couple of months we had our own boat pretty much. before we started looking around boats, we'd never been on a canal boat in holiday, never stepped foot in a boat, never been up and down the canal on a boat or anything. So it was all completely new. We just literally just jumped in at the deep end, and that was it. I learned from, I think, like the first time I steered, it was literally bringing it a 3-day cruise from Devizes down to here. And so that was our journey. We had 3 days to work out what we were doing on the boat, was quite exciting, but it was pretty scary.
That's a baptism of fire.
Yeah, it was in the deep end. All or nothing, pretty much. We'd just invested every penny we had into something we knew nothing about, really, but wouldn't look back now.
That's good. Obviously your experience has been great, and considering you didn't know what you were getting yourself into, I think it turned out remarkably well, really.
Yeah, thankfully.
And the fact definitely. That, I mean, did you crash your boat, or did you have any mishaps?
Not like nothing major, but I can remember like the first few months, really. Every time we moved, I was really scared. Like, I was kind of like, this is like, it's not just moving a boat, it's moving your home. Like, everything you have is in that boat. That is your life. So I was like, kind of, I don't want to scratch it, don't want to touch the edge or anything. But after a while, you kind of get used to it, and you chill out a little bit more with it. But it's all a massive, massive learning curve. But it's been awesome being able to help you out with it, because I was pretty stressed about it when I started off. So it's quite good to be able to help you out and kind of everything we've learned pass on to you, which is, yeah, it's quite good. We had quite a bit of help from other people that we knew or that we met along the way. And that's one thing about the boat life is everyone looks out for each other, and everyone you meet, if you ever needed anything, you just ask, and yeah, they're a pretty cool bunch, really.
I found the boating community has been so friendly since I've moved on, and it's a shame I can't meet a lot more people, really, with it being dark.
Cold. Wait till summer, and then there's barbecues along that you just get invited to, and you can just, yeah, you'll see a lot more people in the summer, definitely.
I'm so looking forward to the summer. Definitely. I tell you what, although, like you were saying, it's nice to see the changing of the seasons, and I am really enjoying having the fire on in the evenings and being cozy. Yeah,
it's nice to come back to it nice and cozy.
I cannot wait for the summer barbecues. Definitely. And towpath, chilling on the towpath in an evening in a chair, and just, yeah, meeting so many different people around, because both of us continuously cruise, so it means we have to move around every 2 weeks, and you shouldn't really stay in that spot any longer than that, because
that's kind of the guidelines.
Why is it that, is it just for just politeness for other boaters?
Yeah, or? It is literally, so I suppose, like, so the Canal and River Trust that enforce the canal as such, when you live on a boat, you either have a permanent mooring on the canal, which you pay for yearly, and then your boat just stays in one place. Like, you can take it off and go off cruising if you like, but you can always, that's like your home mooring that you come back to. So you can either do that, or like us, we're continuous cruisers, so we keep moving every 2 weeks. And there's not really too many guidelines as to, how far you have to move and stuff. As long as you keep moving and show you're using the canal as like a journey as such. Which, and like you say, it's great, because for a couple of weeks you'll have some neighbours, and then you'll move on and meet someone new, and over the course of like 6 months or a year, you'll meet up with people, you're more up with them, and then you might not see them for 3 months, or you might be going the same way, so you keep going, and it's really cool like that, because like you say, you get to meet loads of new people, but then like you get to go back and see other people that you haven't seen for ages, and it's really nice. And I suppose having a new outlook as well. Like, you don't really get that anywhere else, where you can just move your home and you've got a new garden, new view out the window every day.
I must admit,
it's pretty cool.
It's definitely a highlight of the boat life, is having a new back garden every 2 weeks, and just the different view. I think it keeps it so interesting. And I love the fact that you're so close to nature, when for a long, long time I've been very much in a suburb, and what you see around you is other brick buildings.
So
the fact that even where I'm moored up now, we're in a field, and there's probably a dozen or so horses out there, and although I sometimes I can't see them, or I think one night they must have actually come right up to the boat, because I could hear a lot going on outside my boat.
Really? Yeah
and it's lovely, and you see lots of duckies going past and swans and lots
of the them. Nature's amazing. One thing I haven't seen is any otters yet. Quite surprised about that, but I've certainly seen a water vole, which is quite rare. And the kingfishers are amazing. Have you seen them going up and down yet?
Yeah, we saw a few when we were on the move. Actually,
oh yeah, we didn't.
That again was one of the reasons why I loved the move so much, because the amount of wildlife we saw on the canal was incredible. I hadn't seen a kingfisher in probably a decade, and even before then I'd only seen it very briefly, but then on that move I think we saw a kingfisher, we saw several, like a couple green woodpeckers, we saw some herons, some cormorants.
Yeah, most definitely. Quite a lot, wasn't it?
A shit ton of ducks.
Oh yeah, everywhere, aren't they?
had a few swans follow us as well.
Oh,
a few
yeah.
vicious looking swans who looked like they wanted to come along for the ride. It was the nature aspect of this life.
We did quite a bit of foraging that trip as well, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
There was there's an abundance of all sorts around in the hedgerows that we were getting, wasn't there? What do you reckon we got?
We definitely had damsons. Definitely had some blackberry crumbles.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're really good.
I remember making. We made this elderberry and blackberry syrup, which was surprisingly really easy to make.
Really good for you as well.
I wish I'd used it more, to be honest, yeah. Because I saved it for a while, not realizing it wouldn't last so long. And I was putting it on my breakfast cereal and it tasted amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah,
considering
that's really cool.
Yeah, it was all free apart from just sugar and water. Yeah. Yeah. Love it. I can't wait to do it again this
year. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. We'll have to do a bit more foraging this year and try and get we're saying we're gonna do like a little map along the canal.
You can't say that one.
No, maybe we won't go. No, that's the potential there, isn't it though?
Yeah.
But no, I was gonna say about the plotting a little map along the canal of where we can forage stuff from. And you know, the time of year when everything's out and everything, should be quite a cool thing to do.
There must be a lot more out there than most people realise, I imagine, because even in that short space of time, that 8 days, the amount that you'd pointed out to us that was around was unreal. I mean, even quince.
I'd heard of quince.
I'd never even seen it, and I didn't realise it was like a bit of a funny shaped apple pear looking thing. And I made a crumble with that, actually.
That's funky.
That was nice. Yeah. What else? You introduced me to pineapple weed.
Oh yeah, love that stuff. That is that's a good little plant. It's a funny little looking plant, isn't it? It's got little yellow flowers on it and a little round bud. And just grows along footpaths mainly where people have been walking, and it likes the compacted soil there. And you literally just pick the buds off and put them in a little tea strainer, add your boiling water, and you have a really nice little tea that actually tastes quite pineapple-y and really sweet. Amazing.
But it blew my mind. The first time you like squished it in your fingers and
you can smell it, can't you? You smell the pineapple.
It really smells strongly of pineapple, which is bonkers because it just looks like a little weed or something. And most people, including myself, for 22 years have walked past it thinking that it's just a bit of grass or something.
I was the same until I got the boat, really. It's completely opens your eyes up to what's out there, actually. Because as you know, instead of when you walk into your car or you know, most people just walk out of the house, down the pavement, straight into their car. Now, you know, we're up and down the towpath, so you see so much more. And I think we're really lucky that we see everything that so many people miss out on, really. It's lovely being out in the countryside, really.
It definitely amazed me with how much knowledge you have about nature for someone at such a young age. How did you come to know about all these different plants, or like you were teaching us all about these trees when we were moving as well, how to identify all the trees? And
yeah, true. I don't know. I suppose I've always been like quite an outside kind of outdoorsy person anyway. Growing up, I lived in Devon, and me and my mum were always out walking on the moor or walking the dogs in woods and stuff. So I probably learned majority of off her probably when I was younger. But when you're, you know, you don't really take it in or kind of think you're learning it until you actually can relay that to someone else. And you're like, oh yeah, actually, you kind of realise how much you know, which is really cool. So I think trees and stuff, obviously I'm a gardener. By trade as such, that's what I do for a living, so I kind of have to know a little bit about plants, so I'll try and learn as much as I can, but I enjoy it anyway. I think if you're out on a walk, and it's nice to be able to identify what's around you and also what its purpose is as well, because most people wouldn't realize there's so many plants out there that have a use for humans as well. Like even if you look at most even pharmaceutical drugs, the majority of them are made up of natural plants, or they've derived from, maybe they're not natural anymore, but they would have been a natural plant at some point, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, opioids, they're like one of the most heavily used painkillers, and they're from poppies.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, everything has a use, and there's so many. It's a bit of a shame, really, how many wild plants there are that don't get used anymore. I mean, there's just simple stuff that in most gardens, and I see it all the time as a gardener. People, you know, oh, that's a weed, get rid of that. But it's just a plant in the wrong place. That's all it is. There's no such thing as a weed or a bad plant. It's just in the wrong place for someone. But yeah, the majority of our native plants do have some use, but it's all been lost nowadays. Just because, you know, I suppose it's hard to. There's other varieties that are cultivated easier, like stuff like spinach and everything like that. There's a plant actually that is considered a weed that you can eat. That it's in like most gardens, and you know you can eat it, but it's not used.
I didn't realize
it's a massive waste of natural resources that we actually have.
You can even eat dandelion.
Yeah.
You can eat the leaves. Apparently, go in salads, and you can use the flowers, and you can use the flowers to make tea as well.
Yeah. We tried a bit, didn't we?
Did we?
And you can.
I tried to dry it out.
Did you not use them?
No, I didn't use them because I put them in my grill above my oven, so they would be in a dry place and maybe a bit warm as well. And I think it basically the heat. Put them to seed. Triggered them to actually. So yeah, they turned out to be no good, unfortunately.
No.
What is something that you don't know about nature that you maybe are looking to learn a bit more about? Because you seem to me someone that actually knows a lot. You know, even mushrooms. We went on a mushroom foraging course not that long ago, and you seem to know. A little bit about that, considering they're so complex.
Yeah. Not loads, though. I think there's a lot more that I'd like to learn about mushrooms and about just having the confidence to actually forage a few. Because I still haven't, even though I know quite a few, I still don't really pick that many, just because it's such a bit of a dodgy kind of, you're not quite sure what you're getting. I'd like to learn a lot more about that. I think that was a great little walk that we went on, wasn't it? So you have to do that again, and I don't know, apart from that, I mean, anything to do with nature, I'm always looking to broaden my horizons and find out a little bit more about, especially like, you know, our local habitats and what we're living around. I think that's really important. Really, I think it's too many people are completely blind to what's around them, really. They're just so caught up in life these days and going down the same old road, and it's a bit all or nothing, and don't appreciate what we've got outside.
So, obviously, with your gardening, you would have learned a lot just through experience and seeing it. But how did you get into gardening in the first place?
I suppose I got my first kind of job as such when I was about 14. And that was working on a small holding farm in Devon. And I absolutely loved it down there. And they used to have livestock. So they had sheep and pigs and goats and chickens. But they also grew loads of produce, like really unusual varieties of produce. And they used to supply it all to like top restaurants around the UK, actually. They used to send stuff up to London from Devon, which I thought was absolutely bonkers, but that's what they wanted, like edible flowers and all sorts like that, which is quite unusual. So I liked that kind of side of growing anyway. And then whilst I was still at school, I think I picked up the odd gardening job, and I thought, yeah, you know, this is all right. And I worked on the farm for quite a few years, actually, and it wasn't until I was about 19, I actually trained as a chef whilst I was at school. I really enjoyed that as well, but I didn't go into that just because I really loved cooking, and I loved like the experimentation with it all and everything, but I just couldn't work inside. I was like, what am I doing? Like, if I was to go in a in a restaurant somewhere. I just have no life outside of it. So that was probably the best thing I ever did, was I didn't go into chefing. And I ended up working on that farm full time. But, you know, as a small family run business, it wasn't, they couldn't pay loads or you know, it was very minimal. So I wanted to further kind of where I could go with that. So it was either go to college and do farming or horticulture. And speaking to a few people in the industry, it seemed that there was a shortage of horticulturalists. So yeah, I went up to Sparshot College and studied horticulture up there for 2 years, which was really great and got me out there into the world of gardening. And yeah, after that, I set up self-employed and yeah, I've been doing it ever since, really.
What does horticulture actually mean? Because I obviously know that you do gardening now, yeah. But the word horticulture,
it's
have
a funny
no
word,
idea.
Yeah, it's a funny word. I didn't know what it meant until I kind of started studying it. But I suppose horticulture, it's just kind of like, it's like a holistic, broadened word that includes like everything in horticulture, which so is kind of like landscaping, garden maintenance, garden design, garden history, plants, you know, plant science, biology, soil science. There's just kind of covers everything, really. So it's just a word that brings it all together, I suppose.
Oh, there you go.
Right.
So, because you said there was a shortage of horticulturists, and then I thought, well, are you a horticulturist now? Then I take it.
Yeah, I'm a qualified horticulturist.
That's
yeah, awesome.
Is that that's the right word?
That's what I'd have to say.
Okay. And another of your claim to fame, and I'm interested how famous you are, because as a sponsored fisherman,
oh, right.
Who's featured in magazines and writes guest publications and stuff. Yeah. How famous in the fishing world are you?
I'm not that famous, but maybe one day. I don't like the word famous anyway, but I'd say quite a few people probably know who I am, and I do meet people whilst fishing who I've never seen before, who know who I am, but I haven't met them before. So that kind of, yeah. I suppose once you've written a few, once you're in the magazines and stuff like that, and your sponsors are, you know, sharing all your material and your catch reports and stuff like that, that yeah, it kind of opens up you as an angler.
How do you get from being just a fisherman or someone that has an interest in fishing, and how do you go from that to being asked to write for magazines or like, yeah, being published?
Unfortunately, social media is pretty much the only thing that I could say has... We might be able to hear Twiggy having a scratch.
We've got Twiggy in the background.
You're having a scratch, are you? Yeah, I'd say social media, and being able, so I'm quite into my photography as well. So it's kind of whilst fishing, taking good photos of what you catch and being able to take good photos of the products you're using to supply to companies. And that's kind of what they're after, really. And obviously just catching fish regularly and I suppose sacrificing a lot of time to go fishing to try and, you know, it's more of a lifestyle than a hobby, I'd say. Social media is kind of the big thing. If you want to get noticed, you know, putting your photos online and stuff, and that's kind of the first thing you got to do, really.
Okay. So if you wanted to be in a magazine, then how much of your time do you have to sacrifice, as you say, to get to that point?
It's hard to say, really. I'm quite lucky now, really, that most of my sponsors actually do my writing for me as such. So they'll actually...
You've got ghostwriters.
Pretty much, yeah. They'll actually come out and meet me on the bank, and they'll just be with me for the day and kind of talk about what I want to write about or what they want to include in it and stuff, and just ping ideas at each other. They'll take some notes and stuff and I'll send them a few photos and they'll take a few photos whilst they're there, and then just put it all together, and they have the contacts with the magazine, so they'll put it in the magazine for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't know that you had ghostwriters. I didn't think you were quite up to to such a high standard.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit easier than, yeah. I wouldn't say I'm a bad writer, but it's easier if you've got someone professional there who does it day in, day out, all the time as their job as such.
Yeah. How did you come to start fishing in the first place?
I started fishing when I was at secondary school, so I was probably about 12, I'd say. And I didn't really know, there was one guy at school that used to go fishing, and everyone used to take the mickey out of him for it, pretty much. But I was kind of I thought it was quite cool. So I used to chat to him all the time about it. And then eventually, I kept kind of hinting that I'd like to go with him, but he didn't invite me for ages. And then finally he said, "Oh, Dan, do you want to come fishing after at the weekend?" And I was like, "Yes, finally." So he took me float fishing. I think I caught one little, tiny little silverfish, maybe like a little roach or something, on that first day. And that was it. I was like, "Can we come back tomorrow?" So we came back the next day, and that was it. 10 years later, 11, 12 years later or something, I'm still going, but I've kind of progressed it a little bit more from fishing with a little float for tiny little fish to trying to outwit some huge, huge scaly carp around the country.
That's awesome. And what is it that makes you, what was it at the time that made you want to go fishing so bad, especially if you hadn't been in the first, you know, in the first instance?
Yeah, I think to start off with, I think it was just that experiencing something different, and being able to, it was quite nice just being able to go with someone that knew what they were doing, and they obviously really loved it as well, and to like bounce off each other. And it was quite, to start off with, like I didn't really know what I was doing, and just trying to catch those first few fish was kind of, it felt like it was very satisfying. It felt like a massive achievement just to catch a tiny little fish. And I think that kind of, that hunter kind of instinct, even though you're not keeping the fish or killing them or anything, I think there's something about trying to outwit a fish that's kind of quite a good challenge. And once you kind of get it, it's very satisfying. And also just being outside as well. That's quite a common theme in my life, I think. Anything outside, I'll do it, really.
I can tell. Yeah. I didn't realise when I first met you as well, that actually when we say that you go fishing, you actually go fishing for like days at a time.
Yeah,
it's not just,
and, yeah, the nights as
it's
well.
Not just one, you know, one afternoon or something, but you're doing sometimes like 3 day stints.
Yeah, that's probably about my maximum. It's probably, yeah, three nights at a time. So I might get there Monday morning and I'll be at the lake until like Thursday, I suppose. So yeah, long old stint. And sometimes I catch, sometimes I won't catch. But it's on those days that you don't catch, and you know you've put three days of your life into it. So you gotta, it's not all about just catching a fish. It's more about being there, learning what's going on, and appreciating what's around you as well. Because I would never fish a lake that's kind of urban or in a city or anything. It's got to be a nice lake as well. Nice fish, nice people as well. You meet loads of nice guys out there fishing as well. And it's quite nice. It's a really good community. Like you'd meet on the bank, you'll meet other carp fishermen that you wouldn't bump into them anywhere else. Like they're from totally different walks of life. And like you come together and you have that same interest. And like otherwise you probably wouldn't have anything in common. So it's quite nice to meet other people that are completely different from you, but you've got that connection straight away, which is really cool.
And you're obviously very passionate about fishing, and it seems to take up quite a big part of your life.
Yeah.
Do you have a particularly fond memory from fishing?
Loads, probably all of it, I'd say. nothing that you know just jumps out instantly, but any fish I've caught, I really enjoy it and appreciate it. And I love looking back at photos of fish that I've caught and reminiscing about them as such. It's pretty it makes it worthwhile. Then it's not just the fish. It's more of the journey, really. And same as living on the boat and being out in the countryside, like, it just makes you appreciate the seasons and your outside and your surroundings and being of one with nature, really, I suppose.
What's your favourite season?
I would say I look forward to all of them equally, and I like the start of all of them, and then after a month I'll be looking forward to the next one, I suppose. I don't have a favourite season. I like it all, really, and I like that change.
I can't believe that you still go fishing even when it's freezing cold and there's frosts or there's like stormy outside and there's
I love fishing in a storm. There's nothing that makes you more alive than being outside in the middle of the night when there's like 60 mile an hour winds. It's like lashing with rain and lightning.
surely you're not, do you catch stuff when it's weather like that? I have done,
in fact last winter it was a really hard winter, really cold, and I was fishing quite a hard lake. And I actually only caught two fish in like 3 months. And both fish I caught were when it was like 50 mile an hour winds and really low pressure. So it makes a big difference. So it's better to be there when it's like that than not.
And are there any other nutcases out there at the same time as you?
There weren't that time, no.
Pretty
there are some, yeah. Yes, there are some that'll do anything they can to be out in weather like that.
And do you cope with that weather just because you're hardy or because you've got like really good equipment?
Yeah, you gotta have a certain degree of decent equipment, definitely. And you know, there's no point being there if you're gonna get cold or wet or anything. Otherwise it's not gonna be very pleasant.
Do you get cold on the boat?
No.
Is it cold?
On the boat, is it cold? No, I don't think it is. Are you cold on yours?
I actually find that in the mornings, and maybe it's because I haven't quite got the knack of it yet, but in the mornings I do wake up quite cold.
Yeah.
And I struggle to drag myself out of bed when I'm all wrapped up nice and cozy.
Yeah, I bet you just want to stay there. Yeah. I think there's a certain, yeah, you gotta just pile the coal on the fire before bed if you want it to go all the way through. Definitely, okay. Definitely. And that's something our first winter on the boat, I suppose it was kind of late spring by the time we moved on the boat, but it was still pretty chilly. And yeah, I wasn't great at fires, and they were going out and it was cold and the wood was wet, and it just made it a pain. But once you get your head around it, it's not too bad. It's knowing, like you said earlier, knowing your fire, knowing when to put more wood on, kind of, you know, I suppose like we're kind of at the stage where I'll put a load of wood on, and I know kind of roughly, I won't have to look at it for another 3 or 4 hours because I know kind of how slow that's going to burn or whatever, and just makes it a lot easier. But yeah, you can't beat the winter time coming back in and getting the fire on. It just makes it so nice and cosy.
I don't know, it's a hard one, but it's right up there with my favourite things about the boat, because I've always wanted to live somewhere where I had a fire and where I could be lighting fires. And I remember my mum, I'd come home from scout camp when I was younger, and I'd get home and I'd say, "Mum, can I make a fire in the back garden?" And
yeah,
you know, and she'd definitely be like, no way.
No, oh, no.
But now I can make a fire every day, so have that, Mum.
Exactly.
I can do what I want. I know that the there are some, it's not all singing and dancing on the boat.
No, it's, to be fair, it's a, you get a lot of people that think it's an easy life. It's not an easy life at all. It's like it's a rewarding life, but you have to be on top of it, and yeah, it is a lot of effort.
There's certainly a lot of traipsing up and down the blooming towpath with, you know, lugging about wood or like lugging around my washing and my food chopping half a mile down the towpath.
It's a full workout living on a boat.
Yeah, it's nature's gym, isn't it, really, being out and about. And yeah, I love the fact that you can feel satisfied and rewarded that you are sustaining yourself.
Yeah, without a doubt.
You're quite self-reliant and you know, you have to source your own wood, or you have to make sure that you have enough water in the boat, or
exactly. It certainly makes you more aware of your kind of consumption as a human as well, especially like say with water and emptying your own toilet and stuff like that. It makes you appreciate everything a little bit more, I reckon.
What's been the hardest time for you on your boating journey?
I'll say there's been a few mishaps where I've wanted just to leave the boat. Definitely. I'll say there's one, probably like the hardest actually physical kind of thing was once mooring up on the Thames when we were on our little journey. We went up the Thames for a couple of weeks, and there was one time when we were trying to moor up, and we had to moor up on one side of the bank. The other side of the bank was too shallow. Like, you could see you couldn't get in there to moor up, but there was really strong wind pushing us out into the middle. So we kept trying to get into the bank, and it kept blowing us back out. So eventually we got in close enough, and I threw all the ropes off, and then I jumped off and left Sophie on the boat, and I was trying to haul the boat in against the wind just by the ropes. And I mean, like, it was really windy, and I was really, really struggling. And somehow one of the ropes got back into the water, wrapped around the propeller. So Sophie had no control on the throttle, so she couldn't do anything from the boat. Luckily, I've realised that the rope was around the propeller, and managed to get her to turn the engine off before it, I don't know, blew up the engine or whatever it does.
Flames started coming out.
I'm not sure what would have happened. And then somehow I managed to hold onto the boat by one rope, and the whole boat actually, it kind of did 180 degrees all the way around in the wind before it came back in. We managed to eventually pull it in, but it's like, it's times like that where you're just like, oh my God, what am I doing? This is really hard work. But it's, yeah, you kind of learn. You learn from your mistakes. And nowadays, if I saw that was going to happen, I just wouldn't moor up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
very wise. You know, you are going to learn from those experiences and know what to do and what not to do.
Yeah.
And exactly. I was making basic errors when I first came on the boat, and I had one or two nights where I was charging the batteries up by running the engine.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, within an hour or two, the batteries were almost flat again, and I was just thinking, what on earth am I doing? I can't even sustain, you know, a couple of lights for an hour. You know, you know, how am I going to survive this hard winter that everyone keeps banging on about? I'm screwed. So, you know, thankfully the chap who I bought the boat off was very supportive, and he you know, gave me a load of tips, and I figured out I was doing some basic stuff wrong. But yeah, it's not all singing and dancing. But
no, definitely not.
It's what's the most rewarding thing about it, would you say?
Apart from being in the countryside, I'd say, like you said, being able to support yourself. You know, you're generating your own electricity, you're getting your own water, you're getting your own wood and everything. And it is kind of, it's quite nice to know that if outside of here, whatever else is going on, you're kind of, you know, you're right. If you can sustain yourself, that's, you know, you're not relying on anyone or anything really. Which is always good, and it's I think there's a lot of satisfaction in boating, being able to do everything yourself and not have to rely. I mean, there are stuff you have to rely on, like you know, there's a lot of maintenance of the engine, but it's so, you know, you have a boat marine engineer and stuff like that, but it's stuff you can learn about. And I've been trying that since we've had our boat. Every time something's kind of gone wrong on our engine, because our boat's a bit older than yours, isn't it? So we've probably had quite a lot more problems with our engine, because it's like a, I suppose it's a 25-year-old engine, and so I've had to kind of replace the starter motor, the alternator, the belts on it, all our batteries, and like stuff like that. It's kind of like when you first start doing it, you're like, oh my God, what on earth is all of this stuff? But after a while, every time something goes wrong on it, you kind of learn about that a little bit. And it's quite a nice journey going on, figuring it all out. So it's quite, the dog's just jumped off me again. It's quite exciting learning about it.
Will you always be on a boat, or have you got eyes on something else in the future?
I'm not too sure. I think we'll always have a boat, definitely. We'd like to go off and cruise the whole canal system at some point, go all the way around the UK, just take a year out and go and do that, which would be amazing. And then maybe if we have a family on the boat, then we might end up getting a bigger boat. Or what I'd quite like to do is actually find a piece of land alongside the canal, which I'd be able to buy. So I could keep the boat on the canal, but have a small piece of land as like a small holding as well. That'd be the dream. Yeah,
that's brilliant. Awesome. Well, I find it really inspiring talking to you, and I've already, as I say, I've learned so much from being around you and knowing you, and you've helped me out a ton actually with making sure that I'm sorted with wood for the winter, and my gas bottle, I needed to change that.
Oh, yeah.
Last time we recorded a podcast, and we were late cooking dinner because I couldn't get the gas bottle switched, and so you came and saved my bacon there.
Yeah, that massive spanner.
Yeah, that's humongous. All it was. Yeah. So I'm really glad that you managed to come on the podcast, and
yeah, nice.
Thank you for coming.
I know we've been meaning to do it for a little bit, so yeah.
And it's actually the second time we've recorded on the boat itself, so it's proved to myself that this is something that we can carry on doing in the long term, and
yeah,
hopefully.
Yeah, without a doubt.
We'll have Sophie on the next episode, hopefully, and we can carry on talking a little bit about your life, but maybe from a bit different perspective.
Yeah, definitely.
Awesome. Well, definitely. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Will, for taking your time out to sit here and record and edit them all. And thank you, everyone, that's sat and listened to us. So all the best, and we'll see you on the next episode.
Cool. Thank you very much.